in the Scottish independence referendum. 45% said yes, but 55% said no. Almost all the votes in. We're still waiting on the Highlands, but the result, the overall verdict is in no doubt. In the last hour, the British Prime Minister David Cameron has said that the question has now been settled for a generation, but he has promised that he will grant new powers to Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England. Dermot Ferret, our historian, is still with us. But we're going to go to Scotland now and speak to David Torrance, the author of The Battle for Britain, Scotland and the Independence Referendum. David, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Your own reaction to the result?
It is a wider margin of victory for no than I think many on both sides of the debate expected. As you'll know, the polls tightened quite dramatically in recent weeks and actually stayed pretty tight, and so we were expecting something much closer. In the event, it was a decisive victory, not as decisive as I think many in Better Together would have liked, and certainly not enough for, as some on the unionist side would hope, for the whole thing to go away. So no, perhaps not as dramatic a night as some anticipated.
Why do you think the gap widened in recent days?
That is a question which will be answered by, I imagine, dozens of PhD students over the next few years. But of course, a variety of factors. I think a large part was a very clever, slow burn campaign from Yes Scotland, building on a level of support for independence which was always quite significant. You know, around a third, and they've got 10, 11, 12% on top of that. And also a sense, I think, as the campaign wore on, that this was a chance to do something significant, a chance to change something, or that's certainly how it was framed by the Yes campaign. And there was certainly a feeling, and this isn't a scientific assessment, a feeling I had and others had in the last few days, that there was a real atmosphere in Edinburgh and Glasgow, and that people were taking what was presented to them as an opportunity for change.
Where do you think this leaves Britain this morning?
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, just half an hour ago, the Prime Minister made a brief but quite comprehensive statement outside Downing Street, where he said, we're pleased about this result, but at the same time, we hear the 45% of Scots who are saying they want change. And so he re-pledged to take forward the timetable for more powers, which was set out by Gordon Brown last week. But perhaps even more significantly, he also pledged to a similar timetable for further devolution in England, Wales and Northern Ireland. And so for the first time, a UK Prime Minister is taking a sort of holistic approach to the governance of the United Kingdom, rather than just addressing specific concerns, specific constitutional concerns in one part of the UK.
Dermot Ferret, our Irish historian, is also with us. David, stay with us. We'll come back to you in just a moment. From this part of the world, and indeed from any part of the world that was once under the rule of London, to watch what is happening in Scotland, irrespective of the result, that they got to this stage without a bullet being fired, without a bomb being exploded, and nobody being hurt, is remarkable.
Well, what they had was national self-determination, which was not available to Ireland 100 years ago. There's been much talk in recent times, of course, about the constitutional progress, Irish Nationalists of Westminster 100 years ago. The reality was, in Ireland 100 years ago, only 700,000 people could vote. It was a tiny elite that could vote. Women couldn't vote. Those who were not property owners couldn't vote. So you've got to look at that changed context. What was extraordinary about the Scottish referendum was the level of engagement from so many different quarters, that people felt a great sense of ownership of this. It wasn't about elite parliamentary politics. It really was a civic and largely civilised debate. Of course, it got passionate and heated and aggressive at some stages towards the end. But I think that has been one of the hallmarks of the Scottish vote. So you cannot compare Scotland in 2014 with the situation in Ireland in 1914, and to do so really is to completely ignore context.
David Torrance, the turnout of almost 90%, 87% is the latest figure we're seeing. Many of those people who came out to vote today are unlikely to vote in elections that come up in the future, because we heard even Alex Salmond in his acceptance speech talking about meeting voters in their 60s or their 70s for whom this was their first time voting.
Yeah, Yes, I mean, it will be a very tough call to recreate a turnout like that in future elections. Although at the same time, you know, one would like to think with such high levels of engagement that some of that will be retained, perhaps in the general election next year and the Scottish Parliament elections in 2016. It's difficult to think that it will all somehow dissipate.
Yes.
Now that the referendum is over. And, you know, if there is one thing that every party, every side in this debate has agreed on, that is a very good thing.
David Torrance, thank you very much for speaking with us. David Torrance, Associate Director of 5 Million Questions and also the author of The Battle for Britain, Scotland and the Independence Referendum. We'll be back in a moment.
And it is 11 minutes to 8 o'clock on the morning that Scotland has decided. It's decided it's going to remain part of the United Kingdom. The vote 55% in favour of staying within the UK to 45% of people looking for independence. All but one of the counts in. Just before 7 a.m, Scottish National Party leader Alex Salmond conceded victory to the no side and thanked the 1.6 million people who had voted for independence. He then went on to demand that Westminster honour its commitment to increase powers to the Scottish Parliament.
So we now face the consequences of Scotland's decision. Firstly, Clause 30 of the Edinburgh Agreement is now in operation. On behalf of the Scottish Government, I accept the result and I pledge to work constructively in the interests of Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom. Secondly, the Unionist parties made vows late in the campaign to devolve more powers to Scotland. Scotland will expect these to be honoured in rapid course. Just as a reminder, we have been promised a second reading of a Scotland Bill by the 27th of March next year. And not just the 1.6 million Scots who voted for independence will demand that timetable is followed, but all Scots who participated in this referendum will demand that timetable is followed.
And that was Alex Salmond there speaking just before 7 o'clock. Shortly after 7 o'clock, the British Prime Minister David Cameron spoke outside number 10 Downing Street and he said that, of course, that devolution commitment would be delivered on. He also said that people in England, Wales and Northern Ireland should have and must have a bigger say over their own futures. Clearly huge economic questions in that. We're joined by our economics correspondent Sean Whelan in studio. Sean, let's look at what Cameron said and what that might mean for us. In the Republic of Ireland in terms of the increased devolved powers to, let's start with Northern Ireland.
Well, let's start with Northern Ireland indeed. Let's start with the whole package of the United Kingdom. I mean, clearly over the past 30, 40 years, things have been changing in a pretty profound way under the surface of the United Kingdom, and it's coming to the fore now, and we're seeing yet another spread out, or a restructuring of powers in Britain as they head towards what might possibly end up as a federal country. And in that kind of constitutional change, you're going to get opportunities and threats to our own situation here, and it is very important for us because Britain is still our preeminent trading partner. We've seen the kind of growth figures that we had yesterday. That growth didn't come from the Eurozone. It's been coming from growth in Britain, growth in the United States. We're benefiting from their QE, their economic changes. So we are very much tied into what goes on there. Well, and particularly for Irish-owned companies, Britain is the place where things happen. And if you're getting a rearrangement of powers, particularly over taxation, particularly over industrial promotion, that is going to have a very profound effect on Irish business people, a lot of whom are very heavily invested in places like Leeds, Manchester, Liverpool, away from London, away from Scotland, away from Northern Ireland. They're interested in what a future English Parliament or Parliaments might start doing with their money. And you might end up with a Parliament for the north of England having powers over taxation, having powers over industrial policy. That would have a very profound effect on the Irish economy. And that's something that we need to pay an awful lot of attention to. And that's something the Department of Foreign Affairs are going to have to spend money on and putting boots on the ground diplomatically.
Well, let's go to Tommy Gorman, Northern Editor. Tommy, the message there to Northern Ireland. It looks like a lot more power heading towards Stormont. What's the mood like around that? What's the sense of anticipation that you would see around that statement from David Cameron this morning?
Christopher, the bottom line of this is it's appallingly difficult for David Cameron and for his successor to honour all the promises made now. What had to be done in a campaign they were losing was promises had to be made to the Scots, so they're at the top of the queue. But he has to now to take account of the reaction in England. He has a general election coming up next year. Northern Ireland was dissatisfied with the arrangements it had. It had postponed decisions on welfare reform. Under the existing formula, it was getting more per head than any other region of the United Kingdom. It wants more. So can you see them getting more in this situation? They have what's known as the Barnett formula. That's the system used to allocate funds. So they're now going to be looking for more in a situation where David Cameron has the Scots at the top of the queue. He has a revolution on his hands in political terms in England. And he has these decisions to make very, very quickly. This has become extremely difficult for the British Prime Minister and for his successor. And it's going to have implications for Northern Ireland.
A tangled web, if you like, maybe we wouldn't use the other part of that statement in relation to what the politicians were saying on both sides of the campaign. But, Tommy, if you were to take us through very briefly, what is it that Northern Ireland will look for first in terms of increased powers?
Well, David Cameron has a commitment made in relation to a little thing called corporation tax. We know all about it south of the border. And the indications were he was hoping that he'd have an easy win in Scotland and then he'd come to Northern Ireland after the Scots had been sorted and that he would make commitments in relation to giving Northern Ireland power over its corporation tax. But Cameron's big problem all along is he has more demands than he has money to give out. So if he gives power over corporation tax in Northern Ireland, he's going to say, well, maybe you'll be getting less in your overall budget coming from Westminster. So the first thing he's going to have to do is address the corporation tax issue. But remember, the bottom line is Northern Ireland was looking for more in a situation where Cameron has even less to give out.
Sean Whelan, final word to you.
Well, again, just in terms of our own government, I think they cut at the start of this retrenchment process, they cut our consulate in Cardiff. I think they're going to have to re-put that back in and spend more on putting diplomats all across the UK to have intelligence about what is really going on in that country, because I don't think we fully understand it.
Sean Whelan and Tommy Gorman, thank you both for joining us this morning. The time is 4 minutes to 8 o'clock. Brian Finn's here with the business news.
Christopher, thank you. And we're staying with that story because a relief rally looks set to take hold as sterling hovers at a two-year high against the euro. Paul Somerville of Somerville Advisory Markets is here. And Paul, this vote had been priced in for a few days now, but I'd imagine there was a heavy sigh of relief heard coming from trading floors this morning.
Yeah, the markets never really believed that there would be a yes vote. It was a slight wobble maybe a week and a half ago for particularly maybe 24 hours, but the market had priced in a no vote. We are expecting the FTSE to open about 70 points higher this morning, so you'll see some stocks like Lloyds Bank, you know, Standard Life, things like that probably do very well this morning. But the currency markets have already priced everything in, trading against the dollars, sterling against the dollar, trading around 164.50 this morning, which is exactly where it was trading 2 weeks ago.
Markets are back at all-time highs, despite the fact that we saw in the last few days the Americans indicating that the end of this flow of cheap money is coming. So it appears they're impervious to shocks at this stage.
Yeah, well, the markets liked what the Federal Reserve had to say during the week. And basically what they were saying was the US economy is so weak still that they won't be putting up interest rates anytime soon. So that's helped stocks all around the world. And obviously there's going to be more euphoria later on when we've got Alibaba's IPO today, biggest IPO of all time.
Tell us a little bit about that and about the company.
Well, Alibaba is a Chinese internet company, obviously huge. So it's in the space that everybody wants to invest in. It's going to be the biggest IPO of all time. They have underpriced the shares this morning. So the share issue is around $68, but I would expect it to open well above $80, probably a 20% rise today. That's how they want to do it. They want to get the euphoria into the market. So you're going to see a lot of news about this over the weekend, 20%, 25% rise today.
And there's a change in the regulations around, normally if you buy into these shares in an IPO, you stay in for a period of months, but there's a change in this particular IPO.
Yeah, this is how private equity get paid paid out these days. Basically, they can start selling from day one today. They've got about $8 billion worth of stock to sell. They can sell it today, take their profits, and they'll be very, very happy guys.
Paul Somerville of Somerville Advisory Markets, thank you very much indeed. Currencies, just to take a look at how they're trading now, the euro is at $1.29 and around 78.4 pence sterling.
Brian, thank you. 2 minutes to eight, a dreck day for Scotland, as Fiona Ness put it earlier on. Let's see what the weather holds for Ireland. Pat Clark is here.
Thank you. Hello, good morning everyone from Ed Aaron. Well, it's a foggy start to the day with scattered thunderstorms about as well. The fog will clear gradually this morning, but it is likely to stay misty and fairly cloudy overall, with just occasional spells of hazy sunshine. The best of these probably over Ulster and North Connaught. Showers will become fairly widespread today too. Some heavy thundery downpours can be expected, and these could well lead to some local spot flooding, with parts of Munster and Leinster especially at risk. Some hail is likely too. Top temperature 16 to 21 degrees in a moderate northeasterly breeze. Tonight will be close and humid in many places, with patches of mist thickening into fog. Some dry spells, especially in the north and west, but some heavy and locally thundery downpours as well, these most frequent over Munster and Leinster. Drier, clearer weather will develop over Ulster and Connaught late in the night. Early rain and drizzle over East Leinster and eastern parts of Munster first thing tomorrow, but the drier, brighter weather over Ulster and Connaught will soon extend countrywide. Sunny spells will develop, but it will be fresher than of late. Top temperatures 15 to 18, maybe 19 degrees. Best values in southern coastal counties. Winds will be moderate north to northeasterly. It'll be cold tomorrow night, with lows of 4 to 7 degrees expected and patches of mist and fog too. But Sunday looks like being a dry, bright day, with sunny spells developing after the early mist and fog clears. Highs to, on Sunday of 15 to 18 degrees. Sunday night, though, will be cold, with mist and fog returning. And looking further ahead, Monday looks like being a largely dry and bright day, with sunny spells developing after overnight mist and fog clears, but some drizzle will develop in the northwest late in the day. But looking further ahead, the trend for the midweek period will be for cool, fresh and changeable weather. Certainly some rain or showers moving in from the Atlantic from time to time, but at this stage it looks as if amounts should be small. But to recap on today's weather, fog lifting gradually this morning, a little hazy sunshine today but generally misty and cloudy, some thunderstorms as well, especially over Munster and Leinster, with some flash flooding possible, and highs of 16 to 21 degrees. That's how the weather looks this morning. A very good morning.